Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. The last several years have made it clear that we are wading deeper and deeper into the waters of collapse. And I know that in reality, it's still just beginning. There is much further to go, much harder times ahead. That said, what's interesting to me is to not just witness collapse as it plays out, and especially from, you know, a climate change perspective or from a natural perspective, to actually talk about those changes occurring naturally as a consequence of the actions that we've taken as humans. But one very interesting aspect for me, because it's one that is frankly in many ways unpredictable and can lead down so many different pathways, there's, you know, infinite numbers of trajectories it could take, is how humans will respond to collapse. And it's not only interesting from like a sociological perspective, it's interesting because the response is going to have an impact on the course that collapse takes. Human response could exacerbate collapse or speed it up by 100 times or end it all in a moment in a nuclear holocaust. The human response could prolong it. It could make things better if, as a people, we chose to make that the case. Now, I say we as a people with the sort of obvious irony that it's not the choices of we as a people that seem to matter. It is the choices of the elite. And unfortunately, in so many cases, the masses have also been brainwashed into believing that the current way of doing things is the right way of doing things. And I'm not just speaking about those on the far right. I'm not just speaking about those engaged in fascism or outright contempt for the environment, but those who cheer on the status quo, who follow the business as usual sort of neoliberal view of the world. That is, I don't know a percentage, but my guess would be 80, 90% plus of people. And the vast majority of that is because they simply don't pay attention. It's all they've known their entire lives. Things just work the way that they work because that's how they're supposed to work. Somebody knows what's going on and the invisible hand is guiding us down some never-ending prosperous future. When I look at the news and I consider that question of what actions will humans take as we go into collapse, as a response to collapse primarily, I am dismayed to find that most of the newsworthy items are in reference to governments and powerful, wealthy people because they are the ones that make the decisions that influence everything else. They are the ones that have power, correct? Now, again, and we don't need to go into this, but I just can't reiterate enough that the power they have is because the masses acquiesce to them. It's because the masses don't want to take into their own hands the responsibility of making change. And so they allow others to make change for them with this excuse that, again, they know what's going on. They've got this under control. I don't have the power to change anything. And sadly, much of the choices that we're seeing the government make, or the governments make, are in direct opposition to what is what I think right and what many people, you know, are fighting to make the world a better place. I've got a few articles here. One of these really sparked the conversation, and then a few others are just interesting things that I thought of in the moment or noticed throughout this week in regards to the actions that humans are taking. We're going to start with this. Activist group Extinction Rebellion says it is under FBI investigation. This is in Al Jazeera. Environmental group says FBI is visiting climate activists' homes as Trump administration rolls back pollution protections. So Extinction Rebellion is a direct action protest group that has been around for quite a while. They have, in the last couple of years, changed their tactics to be a little bit less direct, less disruptive. And my guess is that it's in direct response to what we're seeing here right now, that governments are starting to come down hard on them In this case, it says the group's New York chapter said that at least 7 of its activists have been visited by FBI agents since Trump's second term began last year, including one person who had 2 special agents from the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force come to their home on February 6th, just a couple weeks ago. The Department of Justice also opened an investigation into the environmental group Climate Defiance earlier this month in response to what Extinction Rebellion said was a viral, peaceful protest. Quote, Trump is weaponizing the DOJ to attack peaceful protesters in order to appease a multi-trillion dollar fossil fuel industry that got him elected. We can only assume that they are feeling threatened by our movement. Now, this is on the heels of, quote, the single largest deregulatory action in American history. It says, according to the Natural Resource Monitoring Group Global Witness, fossil fuel companies, including Chevron and Exxon, donated $19 million to President Donald Trump's inaugural fund last year, representing 7.8% of the total amount raised. A number of fossil fuel companies also donated to Trump's re-election campaign. Trump, who has called climate change a hoax and a con job, has taken several steps to fulfill his campaign promise to drill, baby, drill as president, including expanding oil extraction in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The Trump administration also recently revoked a 2009 government declaration known as the Endangerment Finding, which has been used as a legal basis for regulating pollution under the Clean Air Act, which was originally adopted in 1963. Trump described the endangerment finding as one of the greatest scams in history and claimed that repealing it was the single largest deregulatory action in American history by far. A lawsuit was filed just on Wednesday about this, saying that removing it will lead to, quote, more pollution, higher costs, and thousands of avoidable deaths. So when you zoom out and you look from a macro perspective, many countries are starting to head this direction. Right-wing authoritarianism is becoming more and more the norm. The momentum in many places is heading that way. Nowhere more, perhaps, right now than in the U.S. And Donald Trump's success so far at capturing power shows that the type of corruption that allows for large businesses to lobby a populist authoritarian is successful, that they will get their way, that leader can carry out a quid pro quo and make their industry more successful in exchange for a handful of $1 million and a promise to help keep him in power. The trajectory is obviously towards ignoring climate science, backtracking on previous environmental regulations, which already weren't enough, and actively seeking to shut down groups who might speak up and fight out against it. The people who are trying to improve the situation, the people who are protesting, speaking up with words or actions, funding, are being visited and harassed, let's say, by the FBI and other agencies around the world. This same thing has also happened in the UK, where they have cracked down quite tightly on protest action. The human response to climate change and to collapse in general is going to lead to innumerable, unprecedented actions. These things are going to become more and more normalized. We're going to become more and more desensitized to them, and they will become increasingly dramatic over time. So here's one that I found very interesting. A vote is being put up in Switzerland to create a 10 million population cap. This vote's coming up in June. The article from Bloomberg says Swiss voters will get to decide in June whether 10 million people is all the country can bear. The proposal, backed by the right-wing People's Party, or SVP, is going to a national vote after supporters gathered enough signatures under Switzerland's direct democracy system. Both the government and parliament are against the so-called sustainability initiative to cap the population, largely shutting out immigrants when the 10 million number is reached. Still, it has the support of about 48% of voters, according to a poll in December. The vote will take place on June 14th, the government announced Wednesday. Switzerland's population has grown by 70% since 1960 to 9.1 million, thanks largely to labor demand and the attraction of high wages and quality of life. Campaigners for the population restriction argue that unchecked immigration has led to strained infrastructure and housing shortages. But the initiative is particularly controversial as it would affect Switzerland's free movement pact with the surrounding European Union. This could cut off companies from talent abroad, which many have said is essential, and also threaten other connected treaties that give Swiss exporters access to the bloc's single market. Some of the high poll support for the initiative reflects both economic frustration, particularly in relation to housing and other costs, amid anti-immigrant sentiment in the country. GDP per capita has not grown in the last 3 years. Real wages have declined, said Stefan Legg, a professor at the University of St. Gallen. Quite a few people are worse off now than they were 3 years ago, and then you look for someone to blame. Now, this article was brief. It could have been 20 times as long going into investigating the various reasons behind this. But what happens when countries start to do this? This one may pass or it may fail. I'm not sure the exact requirements for a law like this to pass in Switzerland. But I have no doubt that at some point this will pass. Whether it's in Switzerland or in other countries, it will become more and more popular to say, we will not accept any more people. Now, from an economic perspective, it's really hard to have economic growth when you don't have population growth. So that's one reason why we may not see it happen soon. But we also, as the article described, you know, as we experience economic challenges due to things like mass migrations, due to, you know, having too many mouths to feed or too many people dependent on the system or whatever it might be, all of those things are going to increase throughout collapse. And the pressures on governments, on state, is going to be to lock people out. I think this is going to be no more true than ever as migration increases. When we start to really see areas begin to become uninhabitable and people are leaving in the tens or hundreds of millions, I could see borders closing up and caps being put on the population. This will increase the strain on other surrounding areas and those will act in kind. Anyway, again, impossible to tell exactly what the future will look like in this regard or what actions governments will take. But the fact that we are in 2026 and we're already seeing these proposals pop up, I think is a sign that more of this will come in the future. When it comes to more of the geopolitical realm, there was this article in Euronews that said, Munich Security Conference 2026, Macron says Europe must act proudly, not be vilified. That's the name of the article. The part that I found really interesting was this. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz was the first European leader to take to the stage when he delivered a stark assessment of global politics, saying, the rules-based order no longer exists, with the world entering an era of great power politics, in which the U.S. has possibly lost its leadership position. He was followed by the EU's foreign policy chief, Kaja Kallas, who told U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Mike Waltz, that the U.S. also needs us amid a backdrop of global tensions. Emmanuel Macron wrapped the day one with an appeal to Europeans to be proud and said Europe will have to define its security architecture autonomously. I think the way that the German chancellor put that is probably the best quick summary that you could make, in essence, that the rules-based order no longer exists. That's true of geopolitics, and that's true of local politics here in the U.S. Essentially, it's not any longer about following any sort of law, whether that be local or international. It is about power. Simply doing what can be done because one has the power to do it. The U.S. is taking first steps in this, essentially. They are the ones to break the norms. Society works generally because we have these non-spoken and many times spoken societal rules and norms that we all keep. The U.S. is saying, to hell with those norms. We'll do what we want. We'll take what we want because we have the power to do so. This is causing other nations to have to react. Some will react in kind and say, great, we have all sorts of power as well. We're going to take what we want from those with less power. And it appears that there's no consequences for doing so. While others will need to say, hey, we need to up our security. We need to unify together and find ways to protect against these rogue nations. And those nations may very well eventually follow the same suit or follow suit to break the rules for their own gain as well. It's very difficult to see a world in which this doesn't lead to new world wars or massively changing and shifting power dynamics, and that can upset a lot of things. I dare say that much of these actions that are being taken are preparatory as world leaders see the way the world is heading from a collapse perspective. The writing is on the wall. We have an ever-growing number of people living on a planet with an ever-shrinking number of resources. Meanwhile, as on the backdrop, a destabilized climate that is making the status quo increasingly difficult to maintain. So there's about 100,000 different ways that we haven't talked about in which people are responding to collapse and the ways in which they may respond to collapse in the future. But it's something that I will continuously keep an eye on and highlight as we go. Yesterday's episode, or was it the day before? I don't remember now. Highlighted a topic that was sent to me by a listener. I super appreciate that. If you are listening and you have an idea for an episode or something that's interesting that you'd like to maybe see talked about here, please feel free to send it my way. Can't guarantee that I will get to it. Can't guarantee that it's going to, you know, to be something that I talk about, but I always appreciate them being sent and, you know, we'll talk about them if it fits the schedule. So reach out to me, breakingdowncollapse@gmail.com. Send those my way. Thanks for sticking around with me. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.